Hello and welcome to the Paranormal Guys podcast, the podcast where we discuss all things to do with the paranormal. I'm your host, Kieran. Thank you for joining. In this episode, I'm joined by Christian Senecky, who is an Aberdeen-based magician who's going to be telling us about his new show, Bizarre. Christian, thank you very much for joining us today.
My pleasure, Kieran. Delighted to be here.
So could you start just by telling our listeners just a little bit about yourself and a little bit about the show that you'll be performing?
Yeah, well, I'm a professional actor and magician, and I work with Quids End Theatre Company, or a touring theatre company based here in Aberdeen, but I also work freelance as well. I've worked all over the country, I'm delighted to say, and even abroad, and particularly in the States, performing magic. And I tour a one-man show, which I think you want to refer to later on, called The Graveyard Shift. So that's who I am.
Brilliant. So your show's called Bizarre. So what does that show entail then?
Well, Bizarre is, first of all, of course, during lockdown, everyone in the performing arts and the theatre is struggling. And Bizarre is an attempt to get some online theatre work, although not live, out there to an audience. The kind of magic that I am involved in, because I come from a theatre background, all the magic that I do is tied in with the plays, if you like, performances, telling stories, and rather than just performing a trick. So what I thought I would do was to create a series of short playlets, lasting about 5 to 6 minutes each maximum, each telling a particular story, and each story being presented as a play, but built around two or three magical effects. So the type of magic that I particularly work with would be labeled or called bizarre magic, and the show then is entitled Bizarre, because each of the playlets has got a bit bizarre twist.
Right, so obviously you mentioned, obviously it's quite kind of a bizarre, obviously hence the name, theme to it, but you mentioned briefly in your introduction there about the graveyard shift. I understand that was quite a kind of a dark, kind of darker side of magic that you went with that. Can you explain a little bit more about that?
Yeah, the graveyard shift, well, it's quite a complicated answer, I guess, but the graveyard shift is inspired by my interest in Victorian theatre and Victorian magic, my interest in the occult, my own interest there, and also the work of Victorian magicians. And the idea of the graveyard shift was to bring some of the effects and tricks, if you like, that were being used by Victorian magicians into the 21st century in a show which was very, very dark, as you say. In the middle of the show, or towards the end of the show, I recreate a Victorian seance in which I channel the spirit of a child. And I am delighted to say that during some performances at the Edinburgh Fringe, some members of the audience actually left. I was a bit concerned about that in case they didn't like the quality of the performance. But when I spoke to them afterwards, it was because they were genuinely terrified, to which I was absolutely delighted. Always presented, of course, with two things, historical background in the Victorian period, and always presented with a tongue-in-cheek sense of humour. So Christian Senecky, who is my character, who I play on stage, who is the host of Graveyard Shift, is a dark but genuinely friendly, I think, if slightly to be mistrusted, host for the show.
You mentioned briefly that you had an interest in the occult. It's kind of my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, that a lot of people believe that magic has a connection to the occult. Is this true, or where does that misconception come from?
Oh goodness, those are podcasts for themselves. Really, it's a massive, massive subject. I'll try and go into, it's quite a long answer, so I hope you don't mind that, but I'll try
that's fine.
Into some of this in terms of the connection between magic and between the occult. First of all, if you think about magic itself, even the simple, the simplest of card tricks, if we think about that, in which a member of the audience is asked to pick a card, we return to the deck, the magician mixes it up, and then mysteriously finds the card. That in of itself is impossible. That can't be done. So therefore, it is bizarre that someone is able to do that. So in terms of the occult, meaning secret, the magician has certain secrets to share that aren't shared with the audience. The audience don't know the secrets. And that, of course, has been part of literature and folklore in time immemorial. But where we are today in terms of magic and the occult, I think we could possibly trace back to the beginnings of spiritualism in the 19th century. Now, I don't know if you've ever come across or heard of some characters called the Fox Sisters.
Yeah, I've done a brief discussion on that on one of my truth or fake podcasts on that one.
Okay, good. So, yeah, so you know what I'm talking about. It's the Fox Sisters. Kind of set the ball rolling, if you like, in New York State and in Hydesville in Newark in the mid to late 19th century. And with their form of spirit-wrapping spirituality. And they are credited sometimes by some writers with the beginnings of spiritualism, if you like. The Fox Sisters eventually, as you'll know, outgrew their cottage in Hydesville and took the spirit-wrapping experience, which now became a stage act, onto the stage. The sisters, of course, would go on to eventually recant the fact that in the house there were no ghosts, there were no spirits at all. And in fact, it was the youngest of them, Katie, who was tied apples to strings, and they pulled the strings so it bumped against the floorboards and against the door and frightened their poor mum out of her wits. And that was the spirit wrapping. And of course, they invented a code, the girls, through which the spirits would knock, for example, once for yes, two for no, that kind of thing, which I think is still common in seance and paranormal investigation day. And they took this onto the stage. The Davenport brothers, I'm guessing you've come across them as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Davenport brothers, of course, with their famous or perhaps infamous spirit cabinet. And once again, they were performers, and they took this onto the stage. But of course, before the Davenport brothers, we had experiments such as Pepper's Ghost, the creation of an actual phantom on stage, and John Henry Maskelyne's experimentations on fast phantasmagoria and so on in the Egyptian Hall in Piccadilly. All these magicians and inventors and performers were playing around, experimenting with the idea of the occult and ghosts and spirits in particular being appearing on stage and becoming part of a stage act. Harry Houdini, of course, would go on to spend a large part of his life and his career trying to debunk spiritualists. And it was Houdini who was instrumental in debunking the infamous Davenport brothers as frauds, which they eventually admitted. So if you take the kind of premise that in and of itself, magic is weird, and it is strange because the magician, even the children's magician doing fairly simple tricks for children, has got supernatural powers, hasn't he? He's the supernature, and he's got paranormal powers because he can make things appear, he can make things disappear, and he can pull rabbits out of hats, and he can make one thing appear to be another. Those are supernatural paranormal powers. So I think there you get the link, if that makes sense, between magic and the occult, if you like, the idea of secrets. But in my particular brand of magic, bizarre magic, I guess that some of its lineage can be traced back to characters like the Davenports and the Fox sisters. And I in the graveyard shift, I do, as I say, I do create recreate a Victorian seance and channel the spirit of a child on stage. And in the newest version of the show, I also use a Victorian spirit box.
Wow.
That's a long answer. I hope that was okay.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely fine. That's gone into a lot more detail than I was expecting. That explained a lot more than I knew about it. You obviously mentioned about seances and things, and it brings up a thought in my mind that I'm quite skeptical when it comes to seances and Ouija boards and spirit communication in that respect. But it would make me think that there's some form of, if as a magician you're able to give the illusion that these things are communicating with you, is that something that possibly, do you think, people who hold professional seances, be it nowadays or in the past, have some form of magician training in that, and they can manipulate it as well? Or do you think it's just all a ruse and they're just moving the glass themselves?
I think the key word that you used there, just it's a very good word that you used, is manipulation. And part of what I do is I manipulate cards, I manipulate sponge balls, I use my hands, in sleight of hand, to manipulate objects. But in Graveyard Shift, for example, in my stage show, I manipulate the audience's feelings and their emotions through my skill as a performer. And there's no doubt that the spirit performers, because I think that's what I would call them, of the past, were tremendously good. In fact, they were expert at manipulating people's feelings, audiences' emotions, and taking people on a heightened emotional roller coaster of a ride to the point where they are going to believe the unbelievable, to believe the impossible. And after all, even as young children, remember, we have all lain in darkened rooms looking at shadows and heard things creaking in the house. And of course, we have imagined their ghosts, we've imagined their spirits. And if you can tap into and manipulate an audience's imagination, then that's what the spirit performer and indeed the magician is doing. And in both Bizarre and in the Graveyard Shift, where I'm working with a live audience, that is a huge part. I cannot go on to use the spirit box. I cannot go on to use recreate the seance until I have got the audience, first of all, on my side, that they like me, they believe in me, and they think I can do the impossible. That's important. They believe that I can, and then I can manipulate their imagination. But that's what I'm using, not against them, because that's not what I do. I'm not there to scare and to frighten. I'm using it for them to entertain themselves in a way by using their imagination. It's no accident, for example, that the seance and Graveyard Shift is the last thing that happens, along with the floating spirit table and so on that I use.
I really want to see the show because I know it would be something I'd be really interested in. You mentioned that you performed at the Edinburgh Fringe. Edinburgh, yeah, having such a rich history, a dark history, with vampires and grave robbers and being one of the most haunted cities in the world.
Yeah.
Do you think that having a bizarre magic show helped in, obviously during the Fringe you've got a variety of different shows, but having a dark magic show, do you think that encouraged people more to come and see it because they're in a city that is dark in nature?
Oh yeah, I think so. And you're quite right, the stories of ghosts and spirits and murders abound in Edinburgh. They're all round about you, and the idea that you can sit in a small darkened cabaret theatre for an hour and be scared out of your wits. I think it works very well in Edinburgh. And of course, spirits of another sort help as well in Edinburgh. And there's plenty of that. But I mean, Edinburgh is the atmosphere is absolutely right for a show like Graveyard Shift. And I'm just thinking back, I think this is the third time that I've performed in Edinburgh. And I have to say, I'm very proud to see sellout audiences. So the show has gone down very well. It's now been pulled. Obviously, for this year, there's no performance for this year. But I'm now still working on the show and still improving and still inventing new ideas for it.
I'm obviously with the Graveyard Shift when you're performing at the Fringe. I do believe a few years ago you also did a children's show as well. And that is a complete kind of contrast to what you usually do. So is a children's show completely different for you? Do you find it a bit more entertaining, or do you find it not as fun to do?
Well, you know, it's different, but in one way it's the same. It's different because I don't have to work very hard. Because children are, and by that I mean not that I'm lazy, but children are wide open to, they've got wonderful imaginations. And if you can tap into their world, children are willing and open to believing anything. The amount of children, I think particularly in the US, who actually think that Hogwarts is a real place, for example. You know. So children, it's wonderful to work with children. And to see their faces when they see what is the unimaginable, the unbelievable happening, and when the rabbit appears out of the mysterious box and so forth, it's wonderful to see their faces. So in one way, that is it's wonderful. It's a great responsibility because you have to make, or one has to make, the performer has to make sure that the material is wholesome, but also that it appears to be as real. And children are a really difficult audience. And an adult audience might, for example, let you off slightly if something were to go wrong. I'm not saying that it does in Graveyard Shift, but if it were to, adult audiences can be a little bit sympathetic, not children. They are a very difficult audience to play for. And believe me, you really have to be able to recreate the unbelievable for children, but to see their faces, to see them buying in totally. Now, when you go to perform for adults, of course, 30 years perhaps of cynicism has been built into the adult body, so they come along and you're fighting against that. But by the end of the show, you're sitting looking at big children.
Well, this is it. I mean, I think the minute, even for me as an adult, whenever I see a magician, I always go back to being a child and seeing all the tricks that I saw and going, and you know, I feel like a kid again. But obviously, sure. You mentioned it's a little bit more different performing for kids than adults. Do you think if someone is susceptible to things like magic tricks and that they're going to believe it more than someone who's a bit more skeptical? Do you think the audience needs to be susceptible to it?
Well, you know, that's I think that's where I, as a bizarre magic performer, and indeed I suppose that to a certain extent is true for most magicians, where, but particularly with this material, I think it's very difficult. That I'll tell you a little story about this, if that's okay.
Yeah.
One is riding a very fine line. In what adults feel is believable. I was lucky enough to privileged enough to be trained in Las Vegas by the late Eugene Berger, who was the acknowledged guru of bizarre magic. And Eugene always stressed how careful the magician who is handling this material has to be. And if I can tell you this little story, in the Graveyard Shift, there's a little sequence in which a locket is used, and a name mysteriously and magically appears in this locket, apparently from beyond the grave. And this really is a fairly random name. Unfortunately, the random name that came up in the performance was the name Norman, which turned out to be the name of the lady's dead husband as I was working with this lady on stage. So now I've got an audience member who not only is open to material I'm doing, but is now completely and utterly shocked. And at the end of the day, what I'm doing is a magic trick. You know, so
yeah.
But I have now got a lady who is completely believing this. So I've got to be very careful in that side of things. And as I say, when you get audience members who are leaving your show because they think you're actually channeling the spirit of a child, and they're frightened by that experience, that brings a great deal of responsibility onto the performer in how this material is presented. So one has always, I think, to err on the side of skepticism, and I never leave my audience by saying this was all true. It's always left open-ended for them to make their own minds up. Did they really hear and see the spirit of a child, or did they see, I hope, a very well presented piece of stage foolery?
I think that's a really good point that you've made there. I think it's ultimately down to the person watching it as to whether or not they believe it. But a lot of people, when you mention magic to someone, you instantly, you mentioned Hogwarts when you were talking about the children and that. But when someone mentions I'm a magician, you straight away go, I've heard it when I've mentioned magicians. Oh, he must be from Hogwarts then. And it's like, well, no. Do you think the invention of Harry Potter and that whole wizarding world and all the merchandise that goes along with it, do you think that's changed the world of magic?
I think it's been good for magic in some ways, but the history of magic children and children learning magic is of course, and children being magical and being magical and encountering magical beings. Well, we only have to go back to Mr. Dickens, don't we? You know, to go back to Christmas Carol, for example, where the wonderful character Tiny Tim appears alongside in the novel, alongside Dickens' writing of the four spirits that Dickens conjures up in his books. But Tiny Tim in himself is a magical character. But magical children, characters like Sabrina and going back to Bewitched and so on, the old 1950s American TV series. The idea of magical children has always been around. Now, magic, if I think there's been a huge resurgence, particularly with younger people coming to see magic shows, magic performance because of Harry Potter and because of Hogwarts and so forth. So I think actually J.K. Rowling probably did the world of magic a service. I was drinking my cup of tea there. Probably did the world of magic as far as children coming to see live magic a great service, because I think it has helped to cause a resurgence in interest in stage magic. So I think in the main, there's nothing new in what J.K. Rowling's done, and I think that probably generally it's been pretty good for the world of stage magic.
Yeah, I think certainly when you think about Harry Potter, you think about how it is. And I think if you can relate that to magic from nowadays, like, you know, the magic shows on TV and the stage shows, and they are very mystical as well. There is that sort of connection. You can see how a lot of people have got inspiration from that. But when
I tend to think there is a concern for me just now at the moment, however, in terms of how magic is presented, and I think it is relevant to the talk that we're having just now. And again, I suppose it goes back to my training with Eugene Berger. I'm a great believer that magic should be mysterious. It should be a mystery, and it should be spell binding. The trick that I mentioned before is, you know, you find the card kind of trick, and then walk away. If you don't have, I firmly believe, the story built around that, then what do you have? You've simply got a stunt.
Yeah.
You might as well make a balloon animal and pop it, or balance a chair on the end of your nose. You know, it's like a party trick. And I do get a little bit concerned about two things. One is the kind of, I'm not knocking YouTube here, but the YouTube generation of bedroom magicians who are learning tricks, but they're not performing them to anyone, but they're out there online. They're giving the impression that what magic performance is about is simply doing stunts. And that does us a disservice.
That I think
does the world of magic a disservice, because I firmly believe that every magical effect should have a story and should be spell binding.
I mean, you talked about YouTube, and I think when you talk about YouTube and social media, things like Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, all that kind of thing, where people can make videos, it's exactly the same in the paranormal community, in that even if you were to do a trick and post it online and say, have a look at this fantastic trick I've done, everyone's going to go, that's fake. You've manipulated it. And it's exactly the same with paranormal investigating. So I think social media does have a massive impact on quite a lot of different areas of interest that people have got. Because you can't just share something online. If you're really proud that you've learned this new trick and you want to share it to people, you can't just go, look at this new trick I've done, because people are automatically going to go, well, you faked that. Like, you put an edit there and you put the card in the deck somewhere. So seeing it face to face, it completely blows your mind when you can't actually work out how to do this trick.
Yeah.
When obviously people mention magicians, your mind straight away goes to people like Paul Daniels and David Blaine and Derren Brown. And you mentioned you trained under Eugene Berger. So where do you get your inspiration from? Because your magic is completely different to the likes of Paul Daniels or, you know, your end of peer Blackpool magicians.
It's
completely different. So where do you get your inspiration for that?
Again, quite a long answer to that, I guess. I've always been interested and fascinated by the Victorian period, and I guess my number one favourite author is Charles Dickens. And the Victorian period has always provided me with inspiration, and it was an easy jump then to look at the work of the Victorian magicians. Dickens himself, of course, was a highly accomplished stage magician, albeit amateur, but very, very accomplished. And so the magic of the Victorian period, and in fact, Graveyard Shift tells a story of a fictional magician, Howard Kepler. And I've been very influenced by and very interested in it's a slightly bizarre thing to be interested in, I suppose, but the Jack the Ripper killings and life in the East End of London, terrible life in the East End of London in the late 19th century. And even as a very young boy, I suppose, had a very rather strange childhood, I guess, but even as a young boy, I was very interested in the Jack the Ripper story. And I've attended Jack the Ripper conferences and that sort of thing. But that has been an area of interest for me. I mean, I remember as a very young boy sitting at believe it or not, a Sunday school magic show many years ago, and presented by an old gentleman. I still remember his name. Jim Somerville was his name, and a children's magician who completely blew me away as a 6-7 year old. And I thought, I want to be able to do that, to do what this man is doing. But Paul Daniels, of course, himself, a huge influence. Again, I've been lucky enough to meet Paul Daniels, and a huge influence in him himself. But I think when I trained with, met with, worked with, and trained with Eugene Berger, I was very aware of bizarre magic and performing that field myself. But what one of Eugene's great strengths was tying together philosophy. He was a religious academic, and so taking aspects of religion, including the preternatural and the supernatural, and a wonderful, wonderful magician, as well as I don't say this lightly, a beautiful human being. And the world lost a great man when he sadly passed a few years ago. And certainly he was a massive influence on the type of magic that I do. So I hope that's, and I suppose as well, my own interest as an actor, in as an actor, because that's essentially every magician's an actor, and trying to bring, you know, real characterization to life alongside the magic that I do. So I hope that's helped in terms of some of the influences that form the kind of magic that I do.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, no, I think that's explained an awful lot. Obviously, we've been talking about like the darker side of magic and you know, the supernatural side, and I've always said to people when they say what do I define as paranormal, I would define something paranormal as being something that's not normal. So in terms of magic, I would class magic as paranormal. Like you mentioned, it's supernatural powers and that. But would you say that magic has got a place in the paranormal community?
Well, I'll be very careful what I say here. I think, given the podcast that I'm on, yes, I do. I think, in as much as the audience to certainly a bizarre magic show are, I think they are wanting something paranormal, something supernormal to happen. Because they probably have a great belief that is possible. In as much as I'm sure that even the most skeptical paranormal debunker and paranormal hunter who is going out there to prove that ghosts and spirits probably don't exist, and that I am being very careful what I'm saying here, and that the things are natural causes, I'm sure they would love to see a ghost.
Yeah.
I'm sure they would love to really see a full apparition there in front of them, so that they could experience that. And but it's also, I think, you know, the hunt is part of it, isn't it? Because the fact that one doesn't, there is always the belief that possibly one could. You know?
Yeah.
And I think that mysterious search that goes on in the world of the paranormal and the world of magic, there's always a search for the next most believable thing, you know. And I've sat in front of magicians, you know, some incredibly talented magicians, and sat with my nose literally 2 inches from my hands and not seeing what they're doing, even though I know what they're doing, but not seeing it. And there's that second, even as a magical performer myself, when I know the intricacies and I kind of know the performance science behind what's going on, there's still that moment of disbelief when you think, did that really happen?
Yeah.
Is that possible? Yeah, I think there are very strong links. There's certainly there are historical and cultural links, as I tried to demonstrate earlier on with the spiritualists. And I think there are very strong historical, cultural, and theatrical links between the world of magic and the paranormal. But I think they're very closely linked in terms of the journey in which the seeker, would that be a good word to use, in terms of the journey that the seeker is going on, kind of searching for the supernatural, if you like.
Excellent. Finally, I think it would be a good opportunity for you to try and tell people where they can find you, and where they'll be able to see the show when you are releasing it.
Okay, well, we are literally in the middle of filming the first couple of episodes just now. The trailer is out there. It's out there online. The first play, Bizarre, which is #1, The Ripper. Obviously, there's a kind of Jack the Ripper theme going on there. It will be available towards the end of next week. That's what, the second week of July, third week of July. It'll be out there on the Quidzin page, predominantly out on Instagram and Snapchat, out on Twitter. And all you have to do is to find the Quidzin via the company links, and you'll be able to see the episodes airing free for lockdown, so that Quidzin Theatre Company from Aberdeen are providing theatre, albeit filmed and albeit online at the moment, theatre there, out there online.
Excellent. Obviously, when these videos are posted, I will put the link onto our Facebook page
Our
Twitter and Instagram to get it shared out as much as we can. Obviously, there's been a lot of, just quickly, obviously you talked about the Quidzin Theatre Company, but obviously with the whole lockdown and everything, there's been a lot of discussion over the past couple of days about what's going to happen to the arts and everything like that. What are you doing as a theatre company to try and help that? Is there anything you guys can do, or anyone, maybe our listeners, can help support?
This is, you know, obviously when COVID-19 hit our shores and lockdown happened, we lost, I'm now trying to think, 5 revenue streams, which just disappeared overnight in terms of projects that we were working on. And as a result of that, we are a touring theatre company, so we employ actors per project. So actors that we were working with lost their jobs and lost contracts because of that. And all our live theatre streams disappeared. Now, we have managed to, by the generosity of some of our sponsors and our funders, we have managed to claw some of those back for performance sometime. When? We don't know. Our educational performances appear to be safe, but again, when they will be performed, I don't know. So other theatre companies are doing similar things to us, and in trying to keep alive, trying to keep the arts alive during lockdown. And that's what Bizarre is one attempt, our attempt to try to do that. So I think what your listeners could do, please, support the theatre companies who are working online. For me, as a live stage performer, working online is not my natural environment, I have to say. And I know that I'm speaking for hundreds of thousands of stage performers out there who need the audience. We thrive on the vibe of the audience. So this is not my natural environment, I have to say. But please support the theatre companies to make sure that when we come out of lockdown, we are going to survive. Because many of us working in the arts are self-employed, freelance people. This is the way we make our money. This is the way we put bread on the table. And very quickly, resources are running out. So at the end of this, when we come out of lockdown, please keep theatre alive and make sure that theatre is going to survive. by going to theatre, albeit socially distanced in your droves. And for the meantime, in lockdown, please support theatre companies like Quids Inn who are trying to entertain online.
Excellent. Well, thank you very, very much for coming along and talking about.
Well, thank you.
Like I say, I will put all the links for your social media, and anytime the videos are up, we will put the links on our social media to.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Direct all that information. But when you've released a couple of episodes, you could come back on the show and talk about how it's going.
Yeah, I'd be delighted to do that. Yeah.
We can go from there. But for now, thank you very much.
Fantastic. My pleasure. And it's been lovely. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you.
That's no problem. Thanks very much for listening, guys. And join me next time. Bye-bye for now.
Did you know that you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and subscribe to us on YouTube? You can find us on all podcasting platforms from Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and more. Remember to leave us a review, it will help us out massively, and it will make it a lot easier for other listeners to find us. Do you like what you're hearing? Do you want to give us some feedback? Or do you have a topic that you want us to discuss? Then let us know by emailing us at paranormalguys@outlook.com. Thanks for all the support, and we look forward to bringing you even more great content here on the Paranormal Guys podcast.